I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is Curious Mix. Listen in as we meet the people and explore the places and programs celebrating the arts and culture in our communities. Keep your ears open for these sounds and the stories behind them. How much would you pay to sleep with Pablo Picasso's art? The Conrad Hotel in downtown Indianapolis offers a number of suites devoted to art. It's called The Collection. Each reflects a style of art and contains original pieces from some of the most talented and respected artists from around the world. The work is curated by the Long Sharp Gallery located in the hotel. The gallery offers Conrad employees the chance to become an art ambassador, educating them on the fine art displayed throughout the hotel and in the collection suites. I spent an afternoon learning what it takes to be an ambassador and what it's like to experience the collection.
My name is Lamont King Jr. I am the front office manager, and I'm also part of the art ambassador program here at the Indianapolis Conrad. We go through training either every few months, and especially whenever we have a new exhibit coming in town. So when we have a new exhibit, we get a chance to meet the artist. We get a chance to kind of hear the artist's thoughts and views on their works, ask them 1,000 questions, and they kind of help outline for us how to actually present their material. The art ambassadors kind of take people on tours, introduce them to the artwork, see if they have questions, and we kind of do a little bit of research on our own as well. But we get an opportunity to kind of, you know, voice it with Rhonda or Nicole or any of the associates with the Long Sharp Gallery, and they usually will kind of help bring us into, you know, what we should be looking at and how we should be explaining some of the artwork.
The artwork changes, and it's for sale.
Yes, it is. Everything that's up on the walls, pretty much, I believe, is actually for sale. And if not, we usually will reach out to Rhonda and find out from her, you know, is this available or something to that nature. So we've had some people come into a room and decide that they wanted to take that piece of artwork with them. The collection suites consist of four rooms devoted to art pieces from the pop era, modern era, contemporary, and surrealism. So here we are on our fifth floor, the collection suite. When you're heading to the rooms, the first piece that you'll see is Geno Miles. It's called Transition, a beautiful piece that is a depiction of the morning glories outside of his studio. All of his pieces are tactile, so he loves you to touch them, and he's made them so that they spin and so that they move around. He wants people to kind of just be engaged with his pieces.
So you get the art even before you get into the room.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it sort of represents sort of what the Conrad was doing with these suites in terms of just a transition into something different. Each one of the suites is labeled, so you know which suite you're going into, whether it's the pop, modernism, contemporary, or surrealism. And let's take a walk into the modernism suite. This is the modernism room. And, of course, the first piece that you run into in the room is going to be Picasso's, I believe this is the Tirou et Chirou d'en Aven, which is the bull and horses in the arena. Beautiful etching, of course, also signed by Picasso. Next, above the sectional, you have a Jean Miró. He did a lot of work that was somewhat surreal, but at the same time, it kind of had its own genre, I think. Just basically natural art forms. That's why you'll see a lot of what looks like somebody just kind of drew something. You have some pictures in the background. A lot of it, they you would see eyes as a recurring theme, birds as a recurring theme. These will show up throughout in a lot of Miró's paintings and prints and things of that nature. As you move further in, we come to Henry Moore, and this is Mother Daughter. And this was an etching that he did on aquatint. Once again, some form, but yet at the same time, it leaves a little bit more to the imagination to kind of make wind of what is actually happening in this particular. But you can see the forms and you can see the shapes in it. But I've always been amazed by etching because of the fact that you had to carve something in metal and then make it look like something on paper, which I thought was always fascinating.
The other thing I'm noticing as we're in here, the furniture is placed so you can see the art no matter where you're sitting, whether it's at a chair, on the couch, or at the table.
Absolutely. And that was by design. They wanted you to be able to kind of, when you're sitting somewhere and having conversation, artwork sometimes becomes a part of the conversation, you know, every now and then. But also it's just in view, you know, because you're sitting and you're looking at pieces. Once again, we're back to, you're just thinking about them, you know, wondering what was going on or what's happening in this piece of artwork, because you'll see so many different things in the artwork. And each person who would be sitting in here, the four people who would be sitting at this table, could look at the same art piece and they all would come up with something different, because it would all mean something different to each one. So I think that's what makes art art. Now we step into the contemporary. And in this space, you'll have more of your vibrant artwork, I should say, from a lot of contemporary orders. Here we have David Kramer. When you're looking at the colors and things that he brings to his pieces, I love the form that he does with the faces and bodies that he puts in. He was a master of that. The balance on it is just incredible.
And this is a large piece, yes. And the background wall is really more of a taupey kind of gray, but the pastel colors, the peaches, the greens, the almost spring-like colors.
Absolutely. And that's why I said it just brings so much, you know, out in you, because it's just a bright and cheery piece. People who are looking at this, I would imagine that everyone has something to say about it. If they're sitting in this room together, they probably have something to talk about.
And then Elvis has not left the building on this wall.
No, he did not. Elvis was doing an FBI tour and had the notion that, hey, I'd like to take a mugshot. And they granted him the ability to go ahead and take a mugshot. And it happened to be, this particular portrait is part of Russell Young's Pig Portraits. This is number 42 of 50. And it also happens to be, if I'm correct, the only one depicting someone in a what looks like a mugshot, and they actually are not being arrested. So this was just Elvis having fun, which is really unique, and it is Elvis. I've been a part of art my whole life. I worked at the IU Art Museum as a security officer for about 4 years, and then I took on a full-time position, and I was working overnight there. So who knew some 20 years later I would find myself in a hotel that is very art-friendly and a part of a program that is extremely art-friendly. Being an ambassador, you know, it gives you the opportunity to kind of talk to people, engage with people on a different level. Art changes kind of the conversation. Sometimes there's no conversation. It's just them looking at a piece and letting them kind of be with the piece, you know, and see exactly where it takes them.
Do you ever have people stay in these rooms that really aren't into art at all?
Absolutely. It's a hotel. So you're going to get people in here who could care less about the artwork. They just came in to party and sleep, or just sleep. But it's really interesting the type of person that would be willing to pay to stay in this type of suite and not really and fully take advantage of the books, the artwork, and things of that nature. I find that to be what makes hotels intriguing.
Can I ask how much it is to rent this room?
It depends, but typically it's going to run anywhere between $650, maybe a little over $700 a night. We try to sell these suites really on a limited basis, and it's a lot of times people book them well in advance. And it's easy to book because on the website it actually comes up as the name of the type of suite that it is. It'll say pop, it'll say contemporary, it won't just say collection, but it'll say what it actually is. Mm-hmm. So depending on what type of art you would like to be immersed with, you can choose which one you would like if it's available.
And that's what I wondered as well. Do certain conventions bring more people that want to stay in these rooms than others, or travelers?
You know, I haven't seen that just yet. I think this is more individualized. I think the calls that I get in the field are the ones where someone says that I've stayed in the pop suite already. I'd like to stay in surrealism. Is that available? You know, so they've stayed in one and they want to stay in another.
Details, prices, and information about other art at the Conrad can be found on its website. Each week, WFYI's Melissa Davis takes us into the studio of a local DIY or do-it-yourself artist who is making it. This week, we meet an Indianapolis graphic designer who joined a band and incorporates her sketching talents in a zine about the band's new album.
Four lost travelers are searching the now desolate futuristic world for the great prize in human existence, hope. Within every soul, there is...
So my name is Ceres, and I am a mixed media artist. My preferred medium that I'm going to talk about today is zine making.
And how long have you been making zines?
So I first started, it was a little over a year ago last summer. So I got started in this band called Robots and Magic Powers. From there, I got introduced into zine making. And because I'm a mixed media artist and I'm enriched in a lot of different types of mediums, zine making really appealed to me for the amount of different types of styles that you can mix into it and the fact that it's a very free format.
So what is included in the zine?
Our zine gives kind of a backstory of our band, and I don't want to give too much away because a lot of it is the story of the album, but there's comics in it, so I've drawn each of the band members. We kind of have our own special magical powers, and it talks about how we've been cyberized. So there's this whole kind of story about being in the future and people are being cyberized for this program. And it goes into this whole kind of like fun sci-fi thing.
So cyberized, is that like they become robots or cyborgs or?
It's kind of, yeah, people becoming cyborgs. So they get like these surgeries done to them that turns them into robots.
And your band name is Robots and Magic Power. So is there a robot, like a cyborg robot element running through all of the music?
Yeah, so we use a lot of, it's an alt-rock band, but we use a lot of electronic sounds in it and kind of a lot of these extended intros that go through the music. So there are definitely some robotic elements, if you will, to the music as well. I have a zine here. We're going to go ahead and put this together. So I'll go ahead and staple this here.
What do you like most about zine making?
Really what I enjoy most is that it's so open-ended. And you can really do anything with a zine. You can tell a story, or you can do random art, or you can involve music lyrics, and a lot of zine making is tied deeply to music. And it's sort of like this punk rock form of art because you can really do anything you want, and it's kind of anti-establishment in a way.
What keeps you going with your art?
I guess I just always had a lot of drive. Everything that I've been involved with, I've been just very passionate about. And I think that art just becomes this thing in your life that it gives you purpose in a way.
How does a poem inspire a visual artist? Like this. Here's Curious Mix contributor Terry Border.
We are thinking a lot about clouds at our house. In my work at making children's books, a lot of times I'll have clouds in the backgrounds, the picture made out of pillow cotton. you know, stuff you would buy to stuff fuzzy animals and pillows and that kind of thing. I'll hang it on fishing line, or maybe I'll paint the wall behind it. And now my wife is starting to use watercolors, and she loves clouds, and so she thought, wouldn't that be a neat subject? But actually, they're very difficult, and for her anyway, and for me, I've tried a little bit of painting also with clouds. It's hard to make them look, for me, beautiful and real at the same time. But that's how kind of reality is. I'm looking at clouds, and sometimes they're so beautiful they don't look real. So I looked for some cloud poems, and I was surprised. Well, I shouldn't be surprised, but there are a bazillion and one great cloud poems. So many people love clouds and want to write about them, take pictures of them. This poem is by Gregory Janakian, and it's called Clouds. It was a test on clouds, science 1, 7th grade, Mrs. Snyder, who, I remember, always wore dark colors. My fingers trembled. I couldn't keep a point on my pencil. And in the next row, John Carlson was getting all the answers. Cumulus, altostratus, cirrus. What was I dreaming of? Clouds. They reminded me of Iowa or Kansas, or my notion of them. Expanses of wheat. Big skies somewhere west of where I was, somewhere with rural addresses, dogs named Blue or Jake, and railroad crossings, and a boy's river lazing through farm and pasture. Cirrus fibratus, cirrus uncinus, altocumulus, cumulus congestus. I was losing time. My answer sheet was white as a cloud. And there was a scratching of pencils on paper. What was I after? Summer. A hillside. A cumulus sky driven by the breezes. Kites and kite string humming in the air. Shouts, laughter, in the distance only. Cumulus humilis. Cumulus fractus. Time was up, and we were let go. And I reeled out to the playground and lightened. There was the bluest sky, and I saw fibrous wisps converging into gray. Cirrus spissatus, John Carlson announced, from behind me, maybe to himself, and skipped away at ease with the world. All the way home, I spat out those names I had learned one by one. Cirrostratus nebulosus, altocumulus undulatus, cirrocumulus, cumulonimbus, until I was left with just cloud. Something vague and inexact, but prevailing, like some notion of happiness or longings without name.
He had his head in the clouds.
Very good, Jill. Cumulonimbus, that word just sticks in my brain, and I always wonder what kind of cloud that is. I can't really remember. Do you know?
I don't.
I think it's the really big stormy cloud, but it makes me feel smarter just remembering those words, even though I can't remember what cloud it is.
It is amazing how much clouds spark our imagination.
It is. It is. When you're young, I spent a lot of time laying on the ground in the grass and looking at clouds. And at least for me in my early years after that, 20s, 30s, you're too busy. You're not looking up anymore. You're, you know, making your way in the world. And now my wife and I spend a lot of time talking about clouds. You know, we'll be driving home and look at those clouds. Aren't they beautiful? And I feel a little bit old saying that. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but they are beautiful. And I can't get over them. They're like nature's special effects.
That's Terry Border. He'll be back again next week, floating more poems your way. Just ahead on Curious Mix, truth.
And everything we do is mirror imaged. We're looking at it from the back.
Without the consequences.
Different cultures can blend and combine to make a new traditional food.
I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is Curious Mix. A group of Indianapolis Film School students are using their education to review TV shows. Curious Mix contributor Abby Terzini spent time with the normies.
Oh, didn't see you there. How's it going? Welcome to our YouTube channel. We're the normies. Why don't we take a peek inside?
You may be thinking to yourself, what is a normie?
A normie is someone who blindly accepts pop culture things without understanding the true meaning of it. Like, oh yeah, I saw Mission Impossible. Oh, I love Avengers. I love Marvel. That's a normie, I guess.
That voice you just heard is Suraj Chowdhury, CEO and owner of the Normies. The Normies are a group of friends who watch television shows together. They watch popular shows like Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead, and Rick and Morty. Then they post their reaction to YouTube.
Hey!
Guys, we're the Normies, and we are here to watch the season 8 finale of The Walking Dead.
We watch TV every week, every day now, because we have about 3 videos posting every weekday. So we watch a lot of TV.
They aren't just an ordinary reaction channel. They also play games together and write and produce their own original sketches.
My name is Navi, shaver of mustaches. I claim the beanbag.
A few of us went to school for film, so we decided to put that to use too and actually make some sketches or some parodies out of the things that we watch to be different.
I claim the beanbag. Got a pretty cool shirt on today, and I want everybody to see it. That's all?
Yes!
Yeah!
Yes!
Yes!
Even better!
Suraj started this channel 3 years ago, and the idea came from other reaction channels on YouTube, which he thought could use some work.
This is cool, but it could be so much better. My friends are way funnier than this. This is my thoughts. I was like, I'm just gonna stick a camera on next time I have them over. And so I did, and like I said, the comments spoke for themselves.
Okay, Preeti, which house are you?
Lannister.
Lannister? That's Targaryen.
No, it's not!
That's Targaryen.
That's straight.
Oh my goodness, whatever.
Wait, I thought you liked John.
That first video in our room, we were just being ourselves, friends watching TV, and I threw it out there, not expecting it to grow.
And grow it did.
We just got comments saying, hey, will you guys please do this again next week? So we kept doing it, and we just saw the views get exponentially bigger and bigger.
A recent episode had over 30,000 views. There are even fans who send them gifts. Their first gift was detailed replicas of swords from the show Game of Thrones.
A single fan sent us these swords, actually, before we were even getting any cents or dollars for the channel. These just kept motivating us to do more videos.
Eventually, this led to money donations. Their fans can donate to them at certain tiers and get rewards, like having your name at the end of one of their videos, or...
Our $100 tier, they get to have like a live hangout with us. Not too many people are there, although one person has been on that tier for a couple of years. We don't even know who it is, but we thank them every month.
The donations allowed the normies to get better equipment and computers, but also let Suraj quit his full-time job and focus on the channel exclusively.
I can only get so far working on this part-time, so I was like, if I really want this to be serious, I'm going to have to quit my job and just try it. And what's the worst that'll happen? If it fails, then I tried at least.
Today, they have 5 normies employed full-time and about 12 to 15 who contribute to the channel.
That's how we did it for the first couple of years. Like, hey, can you please help out with this shoot on Saturday? I can't give you anything. I'll buy you a pizza. But now I can at least be like, you know, you will be compensated for this and we can make it a real thing.
At the end of the day, the viewers are what keep the normies going.
Any YouTuber will say, come because of our community, but I will say our community is responsible for making us who we are. So any YouTuber will say their community is the best. I think our community is the best.
Bye.
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 So long.
Bye.
Bye.
For Curious Mix, I'm Abby Terzini.
Without knowing it, an Indianapolis businessman has been sharing his art around the world. Curious Mix contributor Bob Williams introduces us to an unlikely artist.
Neon signs. They're as iconic Americana as apple pie and fireworks on the 4th of July and hot dogs at a ballpark. They tell customers you're open. They let travelers know there's a room available ahead, or not. There's even a 1984 rather campy documentary about neon signs.
Yeah, it's my obsession, neon, my passion. I can sit and stare at that light till my eyes water.
And country music megastar Blake Shelton paid tribute.
There's a neon light at the end of the tunnel.
As well as nostalgic, good neon signs can be an art form. Great ones are tradecraft. And since 1990, with wife Annette handling the office chores, Rick Sabonk has been a great one. Bending, twisting, wrapping, twirling, straightening, and looping gas tubes into neon signs for customers around the country. He makes new ones and repairs old ones to look new, something he's particularly good at.
I worked up at the Star News. I'm a journeyman printer by trade, and I repaired linotype machines. Well, then I started a little carpet cleaning company, and it turned into a floor covering company. Then I bought a little strip center on West 16th Street, and then I got too old and fat for the carpet, so I walked through a school in Hammond, Indiana in 1990, and that's when I started the neon shop. I always liked working with my hands, and I thought, well, I'll try this. By the time I'm 60, I'll be making neon. Well, the first year or so, it just took off so quick that, man, the carpet went its own way, and I've been doing that ever since.
Let's take a walk through your shop and show me what you have.
Okay.
Neon Signs, Inc. may not even have a neon sign above the door announcing their neon sign business, except for the one that says they're open. And there are fewer neon signs than there used to be, but Rick's expertise is still in high demand. We step into the small under 2,000 square foot manufacturing area with racks and racks and racks of different tubes, a tube bender, color samples, gases, various repaired signs, and on the floor, a pattern of circles drawn on brown paper that will soon be a new sign.
This is where we start out with the bending pattern. This is the pattern that we will follow with the neon to make whatever we're making.
So you start off with a paper drawing and then bend the tubes around the...
Yes, and we follow the thing, and everything we do is mirror imaged. We're looking at it from the back.
So how does the gas run through the tube and light up a sign and that says open or root beer or whatever?
Well, after we get done bending the tube and get it followed, then it goes to the processing and we what they call bombarding, and we bombard the neon. Is what we do. And if you look over here at this one, that's what he's doing right here. He's hooked up the thing to a vacuum, and we get a vacuum of 1 micron, and we get the temperature up to 550 degrees Celsius, and then we let it cool down, and after it cools down, then we put the neon or argon gas in it, and he torches it off, and that's a tube.
So it's not the gas that's colored, it's the tube that's colored, and
it's both.
It's both.
It's both. I can show you the colors over here on the
okay. On
the board. If you notice, these two glasses on the end that are clear glass, what you're going to see here, the top one is neon gas, the bottom one is argon gas.
Now, they're both inert gases, right?
Yes, they are. Yes.
So what's the difference between them?
I don't know.
Is one heavier than the other, or...?
I don't know that either. I don't know how all the molecules and everything work, and I know people that do, but I know how to make it light up and work and get paid for it. And that's the important thing.
So where's your client base? You say you have done some stuff for somebody out west, and you've done stuff here.
I've always had a retail operation, so everybody knows me in Indianapolis and around. I go all over the place. You can just look all over Indianapolis and see my neon. And we just did a job that was like 170 some linear foot of neon for a place in Springfield, Illinois. We do places in Ohio. We do Michigan. We do Kentucky, Tennessee. We're all over the place.
And it's just you, your wife Annette, and your tube bender.
Yes.
So you. In your 2,000 square foot manufacturing facility here, you're state of the art when it comes to neon construction.
Well, the processing system we have is state of the art. I don't know why I'm state of the art, but our bending machine, it's a Eurocom neon processing system. And yes, it's state of the art, and it was like the be all. I'm a platinum neon dealer, but that is a very good selling point for me, because most of the neon, or most of the sign companies, when they saw in my advertising that we had the Eurocom system, well, that's what they'd want to go.
So business, though, continues to be good. There's still a strong call for neon signs.
Well, there is. There's a certain group of people that still want neon.
And I just heard your phone ringing. That's the same phone number for 49 years?
49 years, yep. 49 years. Yeah, we've had that ever since. We first got married, we got that, and then I used it on the floor covering. Then I changed it over to the business sign, and every business that I've had has had that number.
Same number.
Same number. Yeah.
And always in the Speedway area?
Well, yes. Well, yeah, where the 241-2185 could be. One time I did have to pay a little extra because it was a little further out, but I paid it.
So you and your wife of 50 years are still young.
I don't know about that.
How much longer do you want to do neon? Like forever?
I don't know. I've thought about retiring, and I go home for a three-day weekend, and I sit around. The third day, I'm about ready to crawl the walls, you know?
Even though Rick is the don of indie neon, neon isn't even what turns the most profit in today's world. It's something called porcelain signs. But if you're of a certain age, it's the neon that harkens back. Just ask Hank Williams III.
Up ahead where I can unwind, 'cause I sure love thunderstorms and neon signs.
For Curious Mix, this is Bob Williams.
It's time to perk up our palates with a little help from Yelp, the online community of ordinary eaters who know the tastiest places in town. When it comes to German fare, they suggest a visit to the Heidelberg House Cafe.
My name is Angela Corkwell. I'm the store manager of the Heidelberg House here in Indianapolis. I've been the store manager for 15 years now, and it is my family's business. We started back in December of 1968. My dad was in the Army, and he was stationed here at Fort Bend. He got out of the Army, and this place was up for sale, and he made it work for the last 50 years. We're going to make currywurst. It is actually a traditional Berlin street food. We are going to use a Knackwurst. It's a pork-based sausage. We are going to cut a lot of slits into this. They're going to be about a quarter of an inch or an eighth of an inch apart. This gives it a lot of texture and a lot of crispiness on the outer skin. And then we are going to dip it in milk. We dip it in milk because it gives it a little bit more of a crispy crust, and it gives it a little bit more flavor than if you were to just fry it by itself. We make our own curry ketchup. It is ketchup based, and then we add curry powder and a couple of other little ingredients for just a little extra flavor and texture. Because of the curry, it has a little bit of a kick to it, but because of ketchup having a little bit of a sweet taste to it, it's almost like a sweet and spicy. It's something different. Tends to be a crowd pleaser. Most people who want to try something different but are scared of trying something too unique, the currywurst is the go-to. You know, different cultures can blend and combine to make a new traditional food. It's actually one of the most recent things we've added to our menu. We don't add much to our menu at the Heidelberg House. I think the last time we added anything to our menu was about 10 years ago, and before that it was probably 20 years ago with the currywurst.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
The Heidelberg House Cafe and Bakery is located at 7625 Pendleton Pike. Still to come on Curious Mix, Looking Up.
My daughter looked up and said, "Daddy, that's you, you're famous." You know, it was a little proud dad moment.
And Falling Down.
You know, I just played it off as much as possible because I just didn't understand why these things were happening.
I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is Curious Mix. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. Photographs that create a human connection. That was the purpose of a recent exhibit at the Central Library in downtown Indianapolis. It was called Sons, Seeing the Modern African-American Male. It featured portraits of 30 black men from the Indianapolis area. Curious Mix contributor Chris Siegel takes us there.
As we're walking into the exhibit space, this is a long, narrow hallway.
I'm just inside the Indianapolis Central Library.
And what we see on both sides of the walls are images of men of color. And I feel like from those images, we see a lot of strength. We see some laughter. We see some softness. We see wisdom. We see youth.
I'm with Nichelle Hayes. She heads up the Center for Black Literature and Culture. She's showing me around the Sons exhibit.
So what we're looking for people to do is to kind of look at that, use your imagination, use your mind a little bit and say, who do you think they are? This comes on the heels of Women of a New Tribe, which was a photographic exhibit that was also by Jerry Taliaferro.
Taliaferro is a photographer based in North Carolina. In his artist statement for the Sons exhibit, he writes, "Most of the subjects in this exhibition are African-American males from the Indianapolis community. They are your neighbors, friends, co-workers, and fellow citizens. Their stories are your stories."
We have one gentleman who is in a dashiki, which is kind of a traditional African-American garb, yet he's holding an American flag. He's a veteran. He's a dad. He's a grandfather. He's a husband, obviously a son. We have an inventor, and we have him with his inventions. We have some people that are laughing, some people that are serious.
One of the men selected for the Sons exhibit is Fred Yakey.
Vice Principal of Culture and Mission at a school called Providence Crystal Ray High School here in Indianapolis.
Fred attended the opening of the Sons exhibit along with his wife and two children.
My daughter looked up and said, "Daddy, that's you, you're famous." You know, it was a little proud dad moment. I think that there's something to a story of a family that is African-American, that is not just new, but it's generational, and that we're successful and we're not in prison. There's a lot of positivity that can be told in a story, and I also believe that people can look at that story and find hope.
Fred is 100% about building and strengthening his community. He told me about an after-school club that he started back when he was working at Arlington High School.
I had these group of kids that when they were at school, they complained. But when school was over, they didn't want to leave. So I went back and I talked to the kids, the students, about what I wanted to do. And they said, "Well, I heard you cut hair." Well, many stories that I use with teaching, I tell them about how I made it through school. And I became the campus barber and I cut hair. And they said, "Well, how about we just cut hair?" I said, "Great, we're going to start a club called the Barbershop."
The boys who joined the club, they were transformed.
And I tell you, man, that club transcended that school. It went from 10 kids to 35 boys, and it organically grew to something that was so impactful that every single person that came through there graduated from high school.
Fred was in the project, but when he was at the gallery, he was just excited to take it all in.
So this exhibit is really one that celebrates family, unity, the human race, humanity, the purest essence of what we are and the gifts that we all have. I myself just want to go around and listen to all of these stories, these I like to say the word testimonies, of how these men became who they are and how who they are is still being defined by what they do.
I also wanted to listen to the stories, and so I asked Nichelle to show me around. we stopped in front of Gary G.
He's looking pretty serious and somber, but if you know him for any length of the time, he's usually smiling most of the time or cracking a joke.
Gary G. is holding a large plaster skull with a gold crown on top. He has on, I'm told, his signature Kangol hat. Nichelle pulls up the video on her phone, and Gary G. responds to some questions.
And the next question is my greatest hope.
My greatest hopes in life are to become a recognized artist, like, around the world. I know I can never take back all the bad I've done in life, but I can replace it with good. And I feel like that's my gift in the world is art.
The exhibit is a celebration of community, culture, and Black lives. But behind that celebration, there's a lot of work.
As people of color living in the United States, we're always on the front lines. There's always some challenge that we're trying to face. And these gentlemen, for the most part, have been meeting that challenge for many decades. So for some people, they're able to take up the torch and put it down as needed. But for the most part, in the African-American community, we always have to have the torch.
The name of the exhibit, Sons, suggests intergenerational relationships. In one portrait, this is especially clear. It's a close-up of Lawrence Township trustee Steve Talley posing with his grandson. Nichelle finds this idea especially meaningful.
I have a lot of powerful figures in my own life. My grandfather Bill, who was a great caretaker for me. He worked in the foundry here in Indianapolis and allowed me to brush his hair back and forth and sideways. As an adult now, I can't imagine what that took to let your granddaughter just kind of do that when you've had this tiring day, you just want to just maybe lay down. But he was always so kind and so warm and inviting. And so I would say that that is most of the community, and that's what I would like people to think about when they come into this space.
For Curious Mix, I'm Chris Siegel.
We all face changes in our lives, some planned, some not. It's what we do when they happen that matters most. Curious Mix contributor Joy Hernandez spends time in studio with Indianapolis artist Katrina Murray, who turned an unwanted event into a positive part of her life.
My concussion happened April 27, 2015.
Indianapolis artist Katrina J. Murray recounts the day when everything changed suddenly.
I was on my way to visit my parents, so she pulled out in front of me and I hit her. My head just shook back and forth like shaken baby syndrome, and my head kept hitting the headrest in the back. So I had a pretty sore neck, and by the next morning everything was hurting. And I chalked that up to just being in a car accident.
Murray would find out later that she had a pretty bad concussion. As her head bounced back and forth during the impact, her brain sloshed around, hitting the inside of her skull repeatedly.
And our brains are basically putty. It's like a really soft, fatty material, so it's jello-like.
Trying to explain what had happened to Murray was a bit challenging. She knew something was wrong with herself, but couldn't figure out just what.
And essentially, I didn't look like there was anything wrong with me. And I took my friend with me to most of my appointments because I was thoroughly confused. Every time I went and every time I left, I didn't know what was up and down and what was said and what I was supposed to be doing. And she even looked at the neurologist and said, no, she's slow. She was teaching at Heron and now she cannot do that.
Murray's work, teaching, painting, interacting with fans of her art, it had all become very challenging. Mentally keeping up with what was going on in a crowded room was now exhausting.
And I stared at people a lot too, because I didn't understand what they were saying. You know, someone asked me directions to where to take the trash here one first Friday, and I couldn't tell her what my left or my right was. So it was kind of difficult, so I grabbed someone and said, hey, could you tell her where the trash cans are? You know, I just played it off as much as possible because I just didn't understand why these things were happening.
Before the accident, Murray was working on a painting series based on the Large Hadron Collider.
I built my substrates with the table saw, wood, went to the lumber store, and then painted with oil paint and worked on several pieces at a time, rotating through.
After the accident, loud sounds, intensive labor, paint odors, these were all intolerable for Murray. Under doctor's orders, she couldn't watch TV, use phones or computers, or read books. In the 21st century, what else could she do?
You go stay with your mother.
With her daughter tending to her studio space at the Circle City Industrial Complex, Murray retreated to Brown County, allowing her brain to heal while she took in the scenery.
And my mom teases me about this still. I got up every morning and said, "Hey, Mom, I think I've got it figured out. This is what I think has happened." And I would say the same thing every morning. And she got to the point where she would just say, "Mm-hmm, yeah." Because initially she was like, "You said that before," and then after a while, it's just like, okay,
Gradually, Murray found her way back to art. But as she did, she found herself gravitating not back to her more recently learned oil painting skills, the product of a Heron BFA earned in 2012, but to her childhood love of discarded objects.
I would go dumpster diving and find all kinds of odd things and put them together in my bedroom, and my room looked like trash, but to me it was fantastic. And my parents didn't say don't do that, you know. So I collected a lot of junk mail, so I think that was my fix for being a graphic designer.
Murray got her degree in graphic design from Ivy Tech in 1992 and is an art director in custom publishing, in addition to creating her own work at the CCIC studio. At home recovering, Murray grabbed the paper shredder.
So I just started tearing pages out of magazines that had a lot of color on them or pattern and running it through the paper shredder and gluing down tiny little strips of paper in rows. And it was a slow process. But it helped me see color, group color, create pattern, and do it in a slow way on materials that I had at home. Even doing that, I had a lot of headache and had to stop and go take a nap and then come back to it. So
soon, her current body of work, titled her Concussion Series, was born. Now, Sacrificial magazines are stacked in Murray's studio, and colorful clumps are ready for gluing. She's even figured out a way to repurpose old paintings into new collages. Some of her paintings are minimal, bean shapes and outline shapes stacked, reminiscent of the peaceful shale rock stacking Murray practiced in Brown County during her recovery. While she's mostly back to herself, activities more recent to the accident elude her. She's turned back the dial, gone back to her roots.
Having been a magazine designer for a number of years, it's now informing my work too. So I think that my long-term memory, things that are like really deeply embedded, I still have. So I can still design a magazine, and I can still cut up a magazine and use that color in my artwork or those shapes or that patterns or whatever. So I do think it's reaching deeper into things that are easier for me to get to. And then the things that are more recent, like, you know, my degree in fine art. So that is more recent information. And then the study, the self-study in the studio practice of painting, you know, that was leading right up to. So where I was making a lot of discoveries about the process of painting and the mixing of the color and the chemicals was right before the accident. So I think that was really taking off for me, and I was really enjoying that. Now I feel like I'm having to relearn that part.
Murray misses the confidence she had with paint. The smell still bothers her and acts as a bit of a deterrent. Instead, she's begun to explore clay, working at the nearby Indie Artsy, creating pieces that come off as 3D embodiments of her 2D collages. She credits a strong, supportive, and understanding network of friends with getting her through her recovery.
They were really taking care of me. Really taking care of me.
Her friends and her art.
Making art actually is very healing. And it slows you down and helps to rebuild the pathways that aren't necessarily working properly or maybe damaged, and it helps you reroute your ideas or your thought processes into direct, and you know, it may be circuitous, but it may find its way back to recovering memory.
I'm Joy Hernandez for Curious Mix.
Brandon Meeks composed and performs our music. And this Curious Mix was created by
Abby Terzini,
Bob Williams,
Joy Hernandez,
Roxana Caldwell,
Sarah Neil Estes,
Melissa Davis,
Matt Pelser,
Terry Border,
and me, Jill Dittmeyer. We'll be back again next week with more Curious Mix.